You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
What's up, Knicks fans? Hopefully by now you've heard about T-Squared Social, your new home for Knicks Film School watch parties. The next one on Sunday, April 28th for Game 4 of the Knicks' first round series against the Sixers. Founded by Tiger Woods and Justin Timberlake, this place has everything for a sports fan. Watch the entire Knicks, Rangers, and Islanders playoff runs or other sporting events like the Red Hot Mets and Yankees or other NBA playoff games. T-Squared also wants you to know that even when KFS isn't there, you could still join them to watch all Knicks playoff games from a private viewing area that features the largest screen in New York City, or reserve a table, grab a drink, and order a delicious meal while surrounded by their several dozen TV screens. Take this Thursday, for example. The Knicks play Game 3, the Yankees play the Athletics, the Islanders play the Hurricanes, and it's the NFL Draft. If you're a Knicks fan but also want to multitask, T-Squared will make sure you don't miss a meaningful minute of the action. T-Squared Social, your number one place to watch the next big Knicks game. Get a free draft beer when you tell them Knicks Film School sent you. Visit tsquaredsocial.com for more information.
Hey there, Knicks fans. How you doing? It's your boy, Jonathan Macri, with you for another episode of the Knicks Film School podcast. Bit of a different podcast than we thought we were going to do today. We had a guest lined up, but some scheduling issues, unfortunately, forced us to push that off to a later date. So always game to hop in to the side saddle. Right? No, not side saddle. What's the thing next to the motorcycle?
Isn't that a side saddle?
Is it a side saddle? Okay.
Yeah. Always happy to be your co-pilot. Your fill-in, your backup QB, you know, your emergency starter, John. I'm always happy to fill in when scheduling conflicts arise last minute.
Like Al Leiter on the Yankees?
Yeah. Sure. Or like, honestly, Pat Mahomes on the Mets. That's what he was, an emergency starter. When he played for them. Pat, for those who don't know, Patrick Mahomes, his dad used to pitch for the Mets. So
didn't realize that. And you know what? I'm just going to say there's a part of me that's a little happy because I don't know how professional I was going to be able to be with a guest today. I've been a fan of sports for 30 years. Obviously a Knicks fan that entire time, been fan of various New York baseball teams over that time. Steelers fan for a lot of that. I don't ever remember, like, there's been a lot of times where I like am bummed going to sleep and then I wake up in the morning and the first thought in my head is like, oh, fucking happened last night. That sucked. And then begins the slow process of getting over the thing, you know, but you do begin to get over, like the process starts, right? You know, you'll maybe be bummed for a little bit. What I'm feeling right now and what I've experienced today, and we're recording this at 11:20 a.m., so it's about, 13 hours and change since the game last night ended. It is just a slow, steady buildup of anger. Pure, unadulterated like it makes me think of like Ghostbusters 2, where the ghosts were feeding off of. Did you ever see Ghostbusters 2? I hope you did.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
It's not a good movie, but the concept of it where like ghosts are feeding off of the anger of New Yorkers, you know, it resonates with me today because I'm just fucking mad and I feel like I'm getting madder by the minute. And that's really, I can't even verbalize. And I've talked about it last night. I just obviously recorded today's Patreon pod, which I talked about a little bit more on there. So shout out to any patrons if you want to go listen to that version of the rant. Yeah, man. Just really angry. Just really fucking angry. And I don't know what to do about that other than I'm looking forward to game 4.
I think you speak for the majority of Knicks fans today. And I thought a lot about how at the end of the stream, I don't know if we said it on the air or said off the air at the end of game 2, that one of the cool things of us doing this, what Knicks Film School does is we're able to kind of be part of history. We're like, that's always going to be the stream we did after the game 2 DiVincenzo double bang, right? And you all these moments that we have in the 90s that we go back to, the LJ 4-point play, you know, the Starks dunk, you know, Ewing's put back to send him to the finals, the Houston running jumper, all these different plays that we go to, you know, now there's one in present day that we can say, well, this was our reaction to it.
Yeah.
It took one additional game to have a comp to, well, what would our reaction or post game would be like in 97 after game 5?
I knew where you were going.
You know, like that next morning after game 5, not knowing suspensions were coming, obviously, but I'm sure a lot of Knicks fans went to bed that night, woke up just angrier. And now it's fucked the Miami Heat forever and ever. Apologies to your cab driver. And I wake up today and it's just like Joel Embiid is public enemy number one. And after going into this series a bit conflicted, just more with my own internal monologue, like, I hate this city. Why don't I hate this team? That's out the door now. No, the Sixers have, I've been asking on every pregame pod, what's your Mount Rushmore of rivals? And the Sixers have just like jumped to the head of the list now. This is now personal, as you said this morning.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's more focused on Embiid than the Sixers. I mean,
but he is the Sixers. Like, he's the process.
Yes, he is. He is a representation of, he is as much a representation of his team, of his franchise, as anyone in the league. And I don't mean that to be like, well, what about Jokic in Denver or like Steph and Golden State? No, that's not what I mean. Those guys are inextricably intertwined with like the history of their team because of their accomplishments and their greatness and their like style of play. The Sixers went out of their way to lose more professional basketball games or more, I mean, than any team in the history of professional sports for years to get this guy. And what has been so fitting about it is that plan was so sound in theory, right? Like, look, the tanking debates, which you can't really do anymore because the NBA changed the lottery rules. I mean, you could still try, but it's just not, it's not going to be nearly as effective. And I just, the league's never going to really allow it. But like, it made all the sense in the world if you were willing to stomach it. Just like Embiid, when you look at him and you look at his game and you look at what he's able to do, makes quote unquote all the sense in the world if you are judging him as an NBA superstar. There is nothing he can't do. There's nothing he can't do on either end of the floor. There is a reason why he finished twice an MVP, twice in a row, and then first in MVP, and was on pace to finish first in MVP this year. When's the last time a player to finish top 2 in MVP 4 years in a row? Maybe did Durant do it? Did he finish?
Didn't Harden do it?
I don't think Harden finished second 3 years adjacent to when he, maybe. You know what? We don't have to go down this road right now. The point is, it's like there's not a whole lot of instances in NBA history of a player being, at least by the voters, a top two player in the league for four consecutive years. He did it. So like the Sixers plan worked. Embiid as a superstar works exactly as it's supposed to. And yet, you don't even have to peel back that many layers. You don't have to peel back one layer. When you look at the impact of losing and maybe what it had on that franchise and the repercussions it had, which leads to all of the shenanigans. I mean, just go read the book that's over my left shoulder, Tanking to the Top. It goes through it all. And it, not even all of it, because then there was like the conclusion of the Ben Simmons saga and the whole thing. It's like, oh, well, that didn't really add up fully. And then you look at Embiid and how he goes about his business and his attitude on the court and how he goes about hunting for points and his attitude after the games. And I think the part that is making me the most angry is his attempt to go up there after, and this didn't hit me at the time. It's a shame. Terrible job by me that it took someone in the Substack newsletter comments to point this out to me. Boy, how about that timing of the Bell's palsy news release by Woj? Right after Joel Embiid gets up there and talks about how, yeah, you know, man, I just got to gut it out. That's what I need to be there for my team. I need to put it all on the line. This is who I am. This is what I do. It's tough, but I got to do it. You know, and to make himself the sympathetic figure, because that's what he cares about. And that's always what he's cared about. He's always cared about the narrative. He cared about the MVPs. He cared about the personal stuff, even when it drove his body into the ground, even when it meant that his team in the long run was going to do less winning. And then what did he always do? Just like that organization did and has done for a very, very long time, come up short again and again and again and again, and his body broke down again and again and again and again. And for that, all of that, and that's why he's so intertwined with the Sixers as a losing organization, because he's a loser of a player. Again, perfect in theory, the plan and him, but look at what the results that it's actually gotten. And for all of that to be rewarded for one night at least, it just makes me sick to my stomach. And I'm going on and on about this.
No, you're cooking. I'm letting you go. I've cleared out.
No, it is irresponsible if you're a national member of the media and you are going to either send out a tweet or have as a lead of your story or open your podcast with the greatness of Joel Embiid without in the same breath talking about what he tried to pull off. Because you know what your job is? Your job as a reporter is to tell the whole story. And it wasn't just the Mitch play. It wasn't just the knee to the Hardenstein groin. It wasn't just trying to, the illegal screen of all illegal screens. Talk about a Bush League move at the end of the game on OG Anunoby. It wasn't just that. It wasn't just kicking a Mitchell Robinson in the nuts as he brought his hand down on Mitchell Robinson's face. It's all of it. It's all of it. It's the whining. It's the pouting. It's the jumping up and down when he doesn't get a call. It's sitting on the floor and slapping his hands on the court. It's how the Mitch thing happened. He grabbed at his legs before there was a grab attempt before he actually got a hold of his legs, before he even jumped. He tried to grab it. And then after he started to fall, instead of like, God forbid, he's like, oh man, I just pulled the guy's legs down. What did I do? Let me try to. No, he pushes him away as he's falling. If it doesn't make you sick to your stomach, there's something wrong. And like, look, he was brilliant. Brilliant in the third quarter. There's no other word for it. There's no context. He was brilliant in the third quarter. Brilliant. It should not make you any less sick.
I don't know how much I have to add to all that, because I co-sign all of it. I think you speak for all Knicks fans today and the frustrations of what the conversation about him is going to be. First of all, James Harden finished second in MVP four different times. There is a gap year in between it where he finished ninth. And the four straight years was a 2, a 1, a 2, and a 3. But that third place finish, he averaged 34 a game during the bubble shortened season, the COVID shortened season, where LeBron finished second. So just to close that loop. Second of all, you mentioned national people with the lead to their story and being responsible with it. You want to shout out Fred Katz.
Fred Katz is the lead of his story,
which I thought was, and obviously, like, we know Fred and we're close to him. That doesn't mean he's not still an outstanding reporter. And
Ian Bagley too. I mean, let's call it spade. All the local beat guys, like Ian Bagley, the vast majority of the tweets that he has sent out since the end of the game have been in relation to what Embiid did. Mm-hmm. You know, Bondi, Popper, like what I've seen from them is kind of the same gist. So let's give praise to all those guys.
I agree. I want to co-sign that if you're leading with that, and it's why I want to just give a shout out to the Ricky, the right to Ricky Sanchez, that I've been shouting them out from the Sixer side. They opened their celebratory post-game pod last night saying, yeah, Embiid should have been tossed. That was a dirty play. Like, they acknowledged it at the top. They kept it a buck, as Mike Levin said. So shout out to them. And look, if the only thing that happened last night was Embiid got 50 with a friendly whistle, but with a dominant second half performance, all would have been like, you know what? The Knicks got some help from the refs in game two.
Yeah.
The Sixers got some help from the refs in game three, yeah. But that's an MVP who rose to the occasion. Our respect for him might have gone up, and that would be the series. But to your point, that first quarter, he was a petulant child. And the stomping up and down,
Sorry. I have a fucking 7-year-old. Mm-hmm. She doesn't do that. If you tell her, no, you can't have a second bowl of ice cream. So I would really love one. No, not tonight. Okay, fine. There's none of the fucking histrionics. Sorry to my cab driver friend. No. She didn't do that shit when she was 5. He's a grown man.
What about your other daughter?
Actually, you know what? She's 3. She's getting to the point where she doesn't really do that anymore.
So that emphasizes the point, John. Like, the fact that we had to sit through that, watch him become unhinged, commit a foul that should have... I mean, that's the craziest part. I was talking to Fred about this. Like, we're up in arms over a flagrant foul, and neither of his...
Which one?
Well, yes, Tibbs, I know. We're up in arms about a flagrant foul that was called, and neither of his groin attempts, like groin shot attempts, are what we're talking about. Like, the guy went and both of our centers took nut shots on Thursday night, and neither of those plays were the flagrant foul. OG Anunoby got hip checked at a blindside hip check, which is a penalty in hockey. And that's not the call that was made.
And I have to say one more thing, because again, in every one of these stories, and I get it. Like, you writers have jobs; they have to, people have to read their stuff. And like, when a great player scores 50 in a game, like you want to make it about that, and you want to say things like the Knicks couldn't do anything with him. I understand the Knicks couldn't do anything with him. The reason the Knicks can't do anything with him is because of how he is officiated. And it is strange to me to some extent, because in another extent, it's not strange at all, because I know the NBA, I've been watching it for 30 years. It is strange to me that he's the only player in the league that still gets this whistle. Like, the moment of the game that just crystallized it all for me, and everything can derive, if you want to derive it all from this moment, you can. And I mentioned on the post game, but again, Hardenstein's fifth foul, where he's just standing there, and he had to laugh. And then obviously, again, the Knicks bench was like looking at it, and they're like, we're not going to challenge this because we're going to lose. That's the reality. Like, yeah, it's a hell of a lot easier to be dominant when you're getting those calls. And sorry, not to sound like Tibbs again, but like, when it's Jalen Brunson, it's marginal contact. It's not. And you know, boy, talk about covering asses. And Tibbs subtly pointed it. He didn't say as much because, again, Tibbs, I don't think Tibbs wants to get fined, which I don't blame him. all those free throws on Brunson came when? At the end of the game, after the result was all but decided. Just to make it look like, whoa, hey, Embiid got to the line 21 times. Jalen Brunson got to the line, whatever, a dozen times. Knicks don't have any grounds to complain. Bullshit. Go back and watch the beginning of that third quarter. And some of the calls that weren't made there. That game was as in the bag for the NBA as any we have seen in a very long time. And look, it got what they wanted, right? We got a series now. So I'm sure the NBA is thrilled, as they should be. They're going to get more games, because if Sixers lose that game, there's no more series, right? What's up, Knicks fans? You know, the other day I was talking to two girls who were telling me how into foreplay they are and how they wish they had more single guys to do it with. No, not that foreplay. We're not looking to get teed up on the pod. I'm talking FOURPLAY foreplay. It's an app where single friends team up and double date other single friends. It's a more fun, lower pressure, and safer way to meet new people, which is exactly why single girls love it. In fact, they love it so much that they make up the majority of teams on the app, as in a 3-to-1 ratio in your favor. Back when I was single, I would have definitely loved this. Look, we all know everything is better with a friend. Just ask Josh and Jalen, even if Brunson won't admit it. And with foreplay, you don't have to sacrifice bromance for romance, because it's a chance to enjoy a night out with a buddy while meeting two new people in a more social environment without any expectation. And the icing on the cake, it's totally free. All right, it's game time. So head over to the App Store now and download foreplay, FOURPLAY, and get ready for a little 2-on-2 pickup. So anyway, I don't know what there else. I don't think there's anything else to say on that. You want to anything else from you?
Look, I pointed it out to you last night. He made one field goal in the fourth quarter, but scored 15 points. Like he was at the line more times in the fourth quarter than the Knicks were in the second half. Like it's one of those things where, again, if that was the only thing that happened, you have to, as a Knicks fan, take a step back and recognize how fortunate the Knicks were at the end of game two. And you just, all right, fine. They got the benefit of a home whistle this time. Now let's suit up for game four. To your point, and really what the entire theme of this is, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be the episode title. Now it's personal. That first quarter, I think, changed the respect level that any Knicks fan might have had for Embiid going into this. And how we're probably going to view him going forward.
Two more things on the game, and then we'll do a quick list of where Embiid ranks now in terms of all time Knick enemies. The two things I think the takeaways from the game, as far as like a game planning perspective moving forward, the Philly's ability to decimate New York's defense, and in particular Jalen Brunson in the third quarter, is something that the Knicks are going to have to respond to. And Jalen Brunson's going to have to respond to it. And I give DJ Zulo a lot of credit. All of our film guys deserve all the credit in the world, because they always manage to rise above the fray. But DJ pointed it out this morning. Like, yes, the shot making was absolutely dominant. Like, yes, the gravity that Embiid draws is second to nobody in the league other than maybe Jokic. Brunson was bad on defense. And he's going to get targeted, and yes, so will Maxey. The difference is that the Sixers have two guys who could exploit a mismatch. The Knicks only have one. So that's why I think the Sixers have been able to more easily withstand anytime they bring Maxey into the action, to say nothing of the fact that Maxey's been pretty good on defense. I know he wasn't great maybe last night, but overall he's been good. Brunson, yes, will need to step up to the plate individually, but also they're going to need to figure out they need to be better prepared to handle that look, even though, as I say that, 9-for-12 from three is 9-for-12 from three. So it's like, you know, I don't want to get too crazy, but both things can be true.
Yeah, look, they should have went zone. Look, I think the the tough part for me is the math of it all. That look, that double screen that they were running, where Maxey comes down the court on the left side, Lowry sets the first screen, and Bede sets the second one, and you have OG chasing over, but it brings, like, because Lowry was there, brings Brunson's man into it. I don't know if you just put Brunson on Tobias Harris, like, treat him and put him in the corner. I don't know. Or just like a different player. So, because Lowry is just an effective screener, just a smart player. Whereas if that's Tobias Harris taking those shots, I'll just let live with Tobias Harris shots if they bring him into the action. But I rewatched the third quarter too. I really only thought, I mean, yes, Brunson needs to be better on that. I really only thought it was two plays. The one screen that led to a wide open straightaway Embiid three and the Lowry three in the corner, where I was like, oh, this is very bad defense. But like you said, 9 of 12 is historically uncanny, that it's tough for me to be like, oh, so much needs to be changed. They just have to be better, like a little bit better, and hope for a little less shooting luck, you know?
Yeah, a little less shooting luck, be a little bit better. And also, like, the Sixers got comfortable in the third quarter. The Knicks did not succeed in making them uncomfortable, which, again, all of this stuff bleeds into each other in the sense that, well, how do you make someone uncomfortable? How do you make someone uncomfortable if every time you get remotely into their space, you're going to get called for a foul? So, like, that's why the notion of, like, trying to make Embiid uncomfortable is, I don't know how they're supposed to do that. And he's Jokic right now. He's generating all of this himself up at the top of the arc. So it's not like they could make other people. I'll tell you who I would love to see in that game is Julius Randle. On both ends of the floor. And that leads me to the only other thing I'll say, which is, like, Brunson was, I don't know, 300% better, 400% better. I've considered it a little bit more. He could still even be a little bit better. And I think you spoke to this last night. Because here's the thing. It's like if there's something that's going to worry me, it's this. It's like, yes, the Sixers needed an all-time quarter from an all-time player to run away with the game that in the way they did, plus the campaign thing, which was just very annoying. But, like, they're going to get something from a role player in every game. Like, you have to be willing to accept that. You also have to be willing to accept the fact that, like, Embiid and Maxey between the two of them are probably going to have a good, very good game. Like, Embiid was incredible. Maxey was, like, he was, like, good. He was fine last night. So does that kind of balance out? I think what I'm kind of getting to is, like, do the Knicks need to play perfect to win two more games? Because unless you want to ask Brunson to do what he's doing and be even better than he is, and then, like, every role player, or, like, all but one role player, or maybe all but two role players to kind of step in and have, like, big games. Like, it's intimidating, and yet I think so much of it's going to come down to how the game is called, sadly. That's so sad, but I feel like it's true.
I gotta be honest, that was my thought. I don't know about how perfect the Knicks have to play. I thought they played their best game of the series.
I thought they played excellent. 100%.
So that's why it's tough for me to be like, no, I don't think the Knicks need to be perfect. But if that's, I said it last night too, if that's the whistle they're going to get, then it's tough to be upset. I actually don't think the whistle decided the game. It's literally the 3-point variance in that third quarter.
But again, like, you have to be allowed to play defense.
Yes, I agree. But I also think if we're looking at, we're repeating some of our points from last night. If they're 6 of 12, that's an insanely good 3-point shooting quarter.
All right, let's move on. Well, look,
I agree with you overall, by the way. I do think that the whistle, I wonder if the league, I don't want to preach conspiracy theories. I thought they got a home whistle last night. I thought they got the benefit of a home whistle that I thought they were going to get going into the game. And I thought the Knicks they won every quarter except the third. Like, they were playing better in the first half. They played better in the fourth quarter, except Embiid got to the line 15 times. Like, they were largely better than the Sixers last night, except for, like, an 8-minute stretch where they became the 2017 Warriors. If that doesn't happen, that's why I'm looking at the margins both ways. We went into this series thinking This is going to be as evenly matched a series as a 2-7 has been ever. And we've
seen nothing to dissuade us from that opinion.
We both took Knicks in 7 for that reason. And this is the point I made the night of your daughter's communion, like that pod we did. We have not been in this kind of series yet. We've known by game 3, this series is going this direction. We just need to buckle up as Knicks fans. Yep. We're back in the 90s against an opponent that isn't inferior or superior. This is an evenly matched series. Buckle up for potentially 4 more games of this.
Yeah. I'm prepared. Okay, let's make a top 5 list. Those are always fun to do. Get our juices flowing.
I've heard top 5s are good. Someone should do a show where they make like 10 of them and then come up with a score.
That doesn't sound onerous at all. No. Okay. So I'm going to just kind of go back in time starting with now. So like let's put Embiid somewhere on this list. This is going to be a collaborative process. It's like making a Hall of Fame, except we're going backwards. I don't think anyone so the only other person from this century basically who should go anywhere near this is Trae Young, right?
Yes.
Okay. I don't even think there's an argument for anyone else, right?
I mean, you could pick someone from the Heat series last year. I don't personally. I know Bam and Jimmy have gotten their attention from Knicks fans, and I think that organization as a whole. Bam Adebayo is the man of the year, as far as I'm concerned, compared to Joel Embiid and what we saw in that first quarter.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think Embiid's at that level. It's only one series, and nothing Bam did rises to the level. In that series, at least, rises to the level. Now, this doesn't have to be just limited to the playoffs, but like that's where these rivalries, like, you know, again, just thinking about like the last 20 years in terms of like, again, just like Knicks rivals, individual player rivals. I the only other player who would be in the conversation, and they've never played a playoff series against this player, is LeBron James. But like, I got
nothing against LeBron. They played him once in the playoffs.
Oh yeah, they did play him once in the playoffs. I forgot about that.
Yeah. And that was a 3-0 series. That was a 2-7 where we knew by game 3, really knew by game 1, the direction that series was going, you know,
sadly. Okay. So the 90s, which we were here for, other than Reggie. So there's Reggie. There's MJ. And then, so someone mentioned Zoe last night.
That's mine. I'd go to him 3.
I'm going to give credit to John Schmilk, who texted me this morning, and he mentioned the name PJ Brown.
Oh, okay.
You mentioned the suspensions. And for a lot of Knicks fans of a certain age, it's always going to be PJ effing Brown. I had so much respect for Zoe because like the Georgetown connection with Ewing, he just played his ass off. He played really hard. Like I never hated Zoe. You hated him?
Yes.
Why?
It starts off as a hateful respect for a rival. The very next year, him and LJ going at it like Van Gundy literally grabbing onto his leg.
That was personal between Zoe and LJ.
I was on team LJ. Like, okay. This is personal between like Mitchell Robinson and Embiid. I'm on team Mitchell Robinson.
So you think Zoe should let go over PJ Brown?
Oh, yeah. PJ Brown's a role player. I don't remember a thing. The PJ Brown memory I have outside of him flipping Charlie Ward is his face being devastated when Allen Houston hit the running jumper and when the NBC cameras went on him. I don't have a single other play from his career. Maybe that should speak to how much he's hated, that the only thing we think of is like him flipping Charlie Ward. But I have much more hatred for Alonzo Mourning in this case. Our list can be different if you want.
They might be different. Here, one more. Does it have to be a player that goes on the list?
Well, I mean, these are two different lists then, aren't they?
Pat Riley.
Teams versus... Oh, you're putting the rat. Okay. Are you putting Pat Riley on a most hated list?
I think he's earned the right to be designated as like a significant Nick rival.
If that's in play, yeah, he goes above Alonso. He's three for me.
All right, hold on. I'm writing all these names down, and then we're going to make our, we'll finish with our respective list. I like the 80s, like the late 80s, like the Knicks weren't all that good. Like they lost to the Isaiah Thomas Pistons the one year. They obviously lost to Jordan's Bulls in the late 80s, lost to Jordan's Bulls a lot. They lost to the Celtics one year. Like, I don't know that. And then the early, like the two Bernard King years, I don't really think anything there rises to this level. I mean, if we're doing an all time list, then we have to get into, I'm not going back to the 50s, but you know, to get into the 70s, like the Bullets and the Celtics were and the Lakers. So the Bullets, the Celtics, and the Lakers were the big rivals. The thing with the Celtics, like they only actually played the Celtics with Bill Russell twice in the playoffs. And like, they actually never got over that hurdle. They never beat Russell. So I don't know that Russell should be there, even though the Celtics are like a number one Nick rival for a lot of people of a certain age. I can't put Russell there. And I also kind of have a problem putting Earl of Pearl Monroe, because like he became a Nick and he won a championship here, but he was a massive rival for them. You know, they played each other in the playoffs, I think four consecutive times before that trade happened, or three consecutive times, whatever it was. I forget what year the trade was.
He's Johnny Damon. Like, you have two different versions of him, you know, that you have him as a rival. You have him as part of a team that won something significant.
So then Wilt?
Sure. I have to borrow the hatred there, because I don't have,
you know, but like,
I don't even have like older Knicks fans that have told me I hated Wilt, you know.
Like, Wes Unseld was a part of all of those series. Nobody in the history of humanity has ever said I hate Wes Unseld. You're right. You know, nobody hated Wilt. Like, so I don't. Yeah,
I'd be curious the next time you talk to Ray, like when we do another Knicks history class, if you get his top five, like if there are guys from the, and look, Embiid being added to this list and this consideration now is a perfect lead in into the conversation, you know?
All right, I'll save that. So let's just basically, I mean, I can't, because we weren't there for it, I can't get to the place where any of those guys make this. So are we including Riley in the list?
Yeah. Are we combining lists, or are we doing?
Let's
two
do one
lists?
List. So okay. I think number one has to be Reggie.
Reggie Miller, far and above. They've made movies about Reggie Miller's rivalry with the New York Knicks. Reggie Miller, I think his career was heightened by the fact that his greatest rivalry and really accomplishment was not that he had great playoff moments, but he had great playoff moments on Broadway against the Knicks.
That made his career. I mean, look, he's a Hall of Famer. He's a top 75 player, but like, Reggie Miller carries the cultural significance that he does because of what he did against the Knicks. There's no question about that. I think Riley has to be two.
Okay. Ahead of MJ?
Ahead of MJ, because MJ is the greatest player of all time. And we knew as we were watching, wasn't watching the sport back then, but I think people had a pretty good idea back then that they were watching the greatest player of all time. And it's like, it's like there had to be a certain modicum of admiration, you know? Right? No, you don't.
Look, maybe to your point, it's more because we were the loser in every interaction with MJ. It's less of a rivalry, and he's more of a boogeyman than he is a rival.
To this day, Knicks fans hate Reggie Miller. To this day, Knicks fans, most Knicks fans, hate Pat Riley. From this day forward, we will hate Joel Embiid. I don't hate Michael Jordan. Do you hate Michael Jordan?
That's you just talked it out. I don't hate Michael Jordan.
You know, so like, I guess it kind of depends on what kind of list we're making. But that's the same thing with Zoe for me. Like, I never hated Zoe. I will never hate Zoe. I have a lot of respect for Zoe.
The night that they retired Patrick Ewing's number and they brought Michael Jordan and Alonzo Mourning to the ceremony. And when Marv Albert introduced Michael Jordan. It was cheers with a few boos sprinkled in. And then Alonzo Mourning came on screen and a chorus of boos from the Garden crowd came. And whoever's bright idea it was, I understand why they did it, but to have Alonzo be the keynote speaker at Patrick Ewing's retirement, I understand Georgetown.
Says a lot. That the like and those guys are friends.
They are. We are not friends with him. Okay. This is a Knicks fan hated thing, and he got booed the entire time that he gave that speech.
Then you know what? Our listeners are going to have to diverge here because I am going to do. I'm going to do three. I'm putting Embiid.
I would. The more we talk through it, I'm there too. I think I'm there too with Embiid.
You are.
Yeah.
Okay. So Reggie, Riley, Embiid.
I'll go Zoe 4.
And then what, Jordan 5?
Jordan or Trae Young. Like you said, I don't hate Michael Jordan. I'm annoyed that the Knicks lost him 5 times in the 90s, you know?
I really hate Trae. Like, Trae Young's annoying. He's annoying to look at. His game is annoying.
But like, that's where the list diverts. Like, it's, I really think it's a Mount Rushmore than it is a top 5. But to your point, if I have to pick a fifth, I'd pick Trae Young because of how annoyed. Look, Kevin Garnett could get a place on this list at five for me, but
if it's a Mount Rushmore, Reggie, Riley, and Embiid, those three, like we like, then honestly, you know who it should be? Trae Young as the fourth, because
okay, over Zell for you.
I really don't like Trae Young. I don't hate him, but I really don't like him.
The tough part with the Trae Young thing is it's literally one series. They don't matter anymore, and we all look back on that series like, that Knicks team was kind of a house of cards where you just needed to remove one card and it completely collapsed. Like, we don't fully think Trae dominated the Knicks in that series. It's very much like we were back in the playoffs. We got to pick a villain. Oh, you're there. We're going to pick you. And, you know, Randall, unfortunately, was kind of spontaneously combusting.
You're kind of right about that.
Like, I don't have like the hatred, and can we keep it all the way? Come correct here, and keep it real.
Sure.
So we're mad at Trae Young for being a small guard that foul baits.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
Right. Why it's tough for me. I'm more talking to Knicks fans right now. Like, what am I most upset with Trae Young about? He's a small guard that foul baits, like, or gets the benefit of being shifty and crafting. You know.
What about Scottie Pippen? Should Scottie Pippen go on here?
I've got no hatred for Scottie Pippen.
Really?
I don't. That Bulls team, we're cut from the same cloth in that our first favorite thing about basketball was Michael Jordan. And I come along a little later. So my first favorite thing about basketball was like the 96 Bulls. So by then, I was more like, you know, it wasn't until 97 that I actually felt a thing for the Knicks.
You know who I kind of want to put here is fucking Mark Jackson, but I don't want to get
too big on this list.
Okay. All right, let's just do this. Reggie, Riley, and Embiid. Let's do your idea. Let's do Zoe and let's do MJ. That's the top five.
There you go.
And eventually someone will come along and we'll kick Zoe off. We'll kick MJ off and we'll make this into a Mount Rushmore and that'll be it.
We should really acknowledge this accomplishment for Joel Embiid. It's the first time he's finished top three in anything except an MVP vote that Kendrick Perkins got everybody to think they're racist if they don't vote for him. Oh, you know, finished top three in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Never finished. I guess he's finished top three a lot. Never top two, though. No,
never.
You know,
we'll never top
which
three
is fitting that he finishes top three here. You know,
very fitting. All right. That was therapeutic. I think I needed that. Good. All right.
What's up, Knicks fans? Quick break to tell you about our new sponsor, Unified. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovated global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System. And if you haven't heard of the EE system yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in the Big Apple or at hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Don't hesitate. Go to unifiedhealing.com/KFS to learn more and find a center near you. Again, that's unifiedhealing.com/KFS. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Andrew Claudio, as always.
Stan Macker, as always. As we transition.
Oh, yeah. As we transition. We got a little bit more of this episode. So stick around for another 10 minutes or so. So if you've been reading the Knicks Film School newsletter, if you've been following us on social, if you've been watching the post games recently, we have a really fun partnership with Autograph, which is a new app that rewards you for being a fan. We recorded a little segment with one of the higher ups at Autograph. I never generally am very excited about these things because it's like what, you know, it's a sponsorship thing, the whole thing. But we got lucky because we got to talk to a Knick fan, and it was really fun, great conversation. And yeah, you'll learn a little bit about Autograph too. But hey, that's good because Autograph's an awesome app, and we're super excited about the partnership. So stick around for another minute. Here we go. Joining me now on the Knicks Film School podcast, I'm very excited to talk to this person because I've gotten a chance to talk to him a few times over the last few weeks. And one, I'm excited because I get to just talk a little bit more Knicks with someone who is a longtime Knicks fan. But also, we get to talk about this exciting partnership that we've developed here at Knicks Film School and allow people to find out a little bit more about what that is. So from Autograph, I'd like to welcome to the show Zach Bright. What's going on, man?
Hey, Jonathan. Thanks so much for having me. Longtime listener. And man, what a time to be a Knicks fan.
So I want to get to Autograph in a bit, but I would be remiss if I did not start with a little Knicks basketball, because I did not even realize when we first got to talking that you not only are a Knicks fan, but you're a longtime Knicks fan. I should say we're recording this before game three, so the vibes are as immaculate as they could ever be. But just like I always like to pick the brain of someone who's been a fan of this team for a while. What is it like? What has this season, I'll say that, or even just like this era, you know, maybe since Brunson arrived, or even since like Randall arrived, been like for you? Because you've been a fan for how long?
I've been a fan since as long as I can remember, since the early 90s when I was a little boy watching the Knicks Heat, watching the Knicks Pacers, you know, the Rockets in the finals there. So my fandom runs deep. My dad honestly says that our Knicks fandom in our family is a virus. We can't shake it at this point. It's like, it's just part of us. Yeah. And so this season specifically with the, you know, the emergence of the Villanova kids and just seeing how hard they play. These guys play so hard. I saw a tweet the other day that, you know, it feels like Josh Hart's playing on a 10-day contract every minute of every game.
That's a great
line. And I, you know, for having so many years of pain, this is such a fulfilling moment, and I just hope they carry it through. And I know that they're gonna fight to the very end. And if that's after the NBA, you know, holding up the NBA championship, which we all hope, or wherever they get to, you know, I'm proud to be a Knicks fan right now.
It's weird because, like, I feel like part of the narrative with this group of guys, the easy narrative, which I know, like, you've been in tune to the narratives over the years, like, oh, well, the Knicks, after all those years of star hunting, they finally, you know, realize like what really matters. I think they were always, as much as hunting stars, I think they were always hunting a culture. They just couldn't figure out a way to do it. And I think they finally got some people in who actually know what it means to have a real culture with the team. And obviously part of that is like what types of players you bring in. You trade for a Josh Hart because like he helps cement your culture. So I think that 10-day contract line is great. I hadn't seen that one.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Tibbs has these guys playing hard. They're never out of it. You know, and I can't remember, you know, a Knicks squad that plays defense like this. I just can't.
90s. I mean, you remember, I don't have to tell you, you go back to the 90s, but like, but that But to compare that is like to compare like an NFL defense today to when like Jim Thorpe played. It's a different sport.
Totally different.
Yeah, the rules are different. So what they're doing is pretty special. Let's talk about autograph for a little bit because like, so again, like just full disclosure to everybody listening, like reached out to me and you were like, hey, would you be interested in this? And I'm always willing to consider anything if I think it's cool. And then you like kind of gave me the tagline and I'm like, wait, no, this can't be a real thing, and it is a real thing. So I want people to hear it from the horse's mouth. Like, what is autograph? Why should people be excited for it? And why should people actually go through, like, download the app and poke around?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Autograph, you know, I've been here since basically the jump. Autograph was founded about 3 years ago by NFL legend Tom Brady and the Rosenblatt family, who's had a tremendous entrepreneurial background in building tech companies and scaling them. You know, we started out, frankly, as a company that was our purpose was to help the highest end talent and brands enter the world of Web3. Clearly, that's a much different space today than it was 3 years ago when we started this business. But our ethos from Autograph One was, how do we make the fan to talent or fan to brand, or how do we improve fandom and make some more interconnectivity between the stakeholders? Because we just don't feel like fandom is working for anyone. And so the new ethos of Autograph and why we've partnered with you guys, and you guys are the true voice of Knicks fandom. And all we're doing, it's not like we've created some secret sauce or we're reinventing the wheel here. All we're doing is rewarding fans for what they're already doing. So you come to our platform, you love the Knicks, right? You follow all the influencers on Twitter, on socials. You listen to the Knicks Film School pod. You read Knicks blogs. You watch Knicks games. You hit that group chat with Knicks friends. You go to the Garden for game one. You're doing all these things. You're expressing your fandom in so many different ways, and no one's really tracking it or rewarding you for it. Now with Autograph, you come to our platform, and just by doing the same things that you're already doing, by like listening to this pod right now, if you do it on the Autograph app, we'll give you coins. The coins are allow you to level up. There's a leaderboard. Now we know who the top 5,000 Knicks fans are, according to Autograph. And we need some more Knicks fans on, because it's a vibrant and growing community on our platform. But all you have to do is come and listen and read and engage with Knicks content like you're already doing, and we'll give you coins. And those coins are redeemable for A-plus experiences, like $24 tickets to game one. And like, we're dropping a Miles McBride jersey tomorrow for $2. We're just offering true Knicks fans who come on our platform and prove it a chance to enjoy that fandom in a more depthful way. And we're super excited about what we're building and where we're going with this. And can't thank you guys enough for all the support and getting the Knicks fans on the app.
No, I mean, one, it's really cool. And like the thing that because I'm not very bright, the thing that I didn't realize until I actually went on was like, oh, wait a minute. This isn't like, you know, like content like from people like you went out and like, you hire just like this is all of the most popular content that's already out there. You're just doing it through this interface. So it's like, it's literally doing exactly what you're already doing if you're a Knicks fan. And then full like transparency, as I'm hearing you say this, I'm like, man, it's a good thing this wasn't around when I started like writing and podcasting, because this was like my outlet. Cause I'm like, man, I'm spending all this time doing this. I need to make something more productive out of this. If you guys were around when I started, I would have just accumulated a bunch of coins. But I will tell you this, the payoff is so nice, because like I think not only do you get to go to games for a cheaper amount, like get through those types of things, but the stuff you guys give away is really cool. And like obviously a McBride signed jersey is really awesome, but there's other stuff too that's like lower level, like prizes and things. It's like, it's really a cool thing. It really is.
We just want to make fandom more equitable. Jonathan, like, you know, some of us who have been in sports for and worked in sports, you know, we have access to certain things that, you know, real fans don't have. So we're somewhat jaded a little bit. But when I go to the Garden and I see the folks up in the top of the 400s and they've saved to get there, and you know, this is a massive, massive moment for them. Like, we want to get those folks who are the real, real fans, not all the folks sitting in the corporate seats who work at JP Morgan or whatever. To, you know, down closer to the floor. Like, we want to help real fans express their fandom in a more meaningful way. It's as simple as that.
Well, it's very cool. And more importantly than that, at least if you're old like me, it's very easy because it's literally just down.
Yeah. You know what people have really loved? Like, the utility of having everything Knicks all in one feed. It's like you don't have to go to all of these disparate fan communities. Just come to Autograph, and everything you could want, including your pod, is in the app. And again, just by doing what you're already going to do, we'll reward you for it.
It's a super cool thing. I am excited to see how it grows, because, like, correct me if I'm wrong, like, the launch for the NBA side of it literally just happened at the start of the playoffs. So, that's the other cool thing. Like, I get, you know, you want people to get excited about racking up coins. More than that, it's like you're getting into this thing on the ground floor if you're downloading now, which is always, I don't know, I always find it cool to be in something when it starts.
Get that great username that you've always wanted, because, you know, we're not going anywhere. We're going to be building this for a while. This is a big swing. Like, we want to, you know, we're a sports company. Tom Brady's our co-founder. You know, we're starting in sports. We're following the sports fandom. And we're just trying to get the real fans of each potential fan community. You know, we started with University of Michigan football, and then a nod to Tom, moved into college basketball for March Madness. You know, really saw some amazing fandom in that space. But then, man, you open up this NBA playoffs, and wow, Knicks fans have responded. And just all I can say is thank you, guys.
Yeah. Last thing I want to say, and I was, again, just kind of thinking of this as I'm talking to you, like, if you're a diehard Knicks fan and, like, you're constantly on, like, different blogs and whatnot, like, you may not feel like you need, like, a centralized location, but what I'm thinking of is, like, how many, especially with this Knicks team, how many people were fans like you, you know, in the 90s and may have fallen out of it. Like, I'm thinking to myself, like, I used to be a diehard Steelers fan, and I just got busy, and it, like, became hard to keep up with it. Like, I'm hoping to get back into the team now. They've traded for some quarterbacks. This come September, I know if I could go to this one place, like, oh, okay, well, it makes it a lot easier to follow the team, because I could just go here and I could just, like, scroll for a few minutes a day and, like, see whoever wrote whatever about the team. So I think regardless of what kind of fan you are, you're the most diehard fan in the world, you're someone who's more of a, the term casual has a derogatory term here, but we're not, but, like, you know, someone who's not, like, living and breathing the team 24/7, I think it could work really well for any type of person, which is really nice.
Yeah, it's really, there's something for everyone. And, you know, I honestly use the app a lot today for discovery, because I think I know a lot about the Knicks, but then, you know, you guys are much closer to the team than I am, and the ins and outs and the nuance and the takes that you guys have and some of your colleagues that are covering the New York Knicks are just fantastic. But having them all in one place, like, I can't spend my day looking at Reddit and looking at going to Twitter and doing all these and going, you know, listening to your pod. Like, if I could just do that in one sitting, in, like, short bursts at once in one feed, like, then I get rewarded for it too. Sign me up.
Well, so if you listen to this, pay attention to the Knicks Film School Twitter feed, because we're constantly tweeting out stuff that is related to Autograph. And then, just more importantly than that, go wherever you get your apps. All you have to do is type in Autograph, and you download it there. Any way you can get the app on your phone, do it. Strongly recommend it. I
poke use the code KFS. There you go.
Perfect. That's right. Use the code KFS. See, look at me. Use the code KFS. Thanks, you, Andrew, for popping it up on the screen so it hit me like a ton of bricks. I think that's it. Anything else you want to say before we get out of here?
No, but let's go Knicks. Big one tonight. I don't know when this is exactly airing, so you can cut this out
afterwards. So we'll look. There will be at least after this drops, at least three more, or hopefully more than three more, because that if it's only three more, that would be bad. A lot more big games coming for the Knicks in this postseason. Zach, it was a lot of fun.
Thank you guys for what you do, and being one of the true voices of Knicks fans. And we're excited to partner with you, and we can't wait to continue this run with you guys and all the Knicks fans in our platform.
Appreciate it, man. Zach Bryant of Autograph, thank you for coming on. And everybody out there, thanks for checking out another episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. We'll be back with more fun and games very soon. Peace out.